above the sound of hissing steam from fractured pipes and boilers, the clanging of bells, the rasp, rat-tat-tat of pom-poms, the shouts, the screams, the moans, and the clamor. Could be heard a chorus of voices calling on everyone to desist from throwing any more wooden objects into the sea. The cascade did eventually stop. There are times in one's life when one takes stock, weighs up what he has accomplished, dreams of what he still hopes to accomplish. He tries to find a meaning to life, especially after seeing poor, innocent women and children and old folk enduring the privations and sufferings of total war, and wondering whether there really is a God. He tries to find some logical answers to some of the questions that have plagued him, and he frequently turns to his religious background for solutions. For me, this was one of those times. Gradually, it dawned on me that the prospects of survival were somewhat limited. The sole hope appeared to be to get into that sea, and as far away as possible from the sinking hull before being sucked under during its final death plunge. Even then, watching men jumping, watching some sinking, and listening to the unearthly din around me, I still did not want to believe the ungarnished truth. Many, including myself, started singing popular military songs, interspersed with songs of a patriotic nature, songs whose refrains were taken up on all sides. Singing and procrastination did not provide the answer. After carefully hiding my valuables behind an air ventilator, in the hope that I could retrieve them later if the boat didn't sink, I backed as far as I could and took a running jump over the deck rail. However, I had not realized the full angle of tilt, for the ship was now almost lying on its side, so that instead of hitting the sea as expected, I hit the starboard side plates, and down I slithered onto the propeller shaft casing. At that particular moment, probably about 40 feet out of the water. Somewhat bruised and scratched, covered in rust and rusty paint and slime, I soon found I was not alone, for I had company, about 15 others. In moments of crisis, many soldiers find consolation in a fag. And this is just what someone suggested. Everyone acquiesced. Someone handed cigarettes all round. One or two others still had matches or lighters. Fate, however, was not to permit us to enjoy our puff. The ship, in her final death throes, gave another rapid downward thrust. There was certainly no doubt about it now. It was time to get into that water. Several around me just could not make the final decision to jump. Some could and did. I was one of those who did. And when I hit the water, I seemed to go down and down for an eternity. With arms extended upright, for I knew I would surface, and breath held until the lungs seemed to burst, I finally popped out of the water with the sensation of rising up into the air. Moving my arms like paddles, I did my utmost to float on my back, but just as I seemed to be learning the trick, a voice close by screamed in terror, "I can't swim."
"Neither can I, Charlie," I yelled back.
But it was too late. I was grabbed round the neck and dragged under. Struggling to undo the tight grip, I somehow succeeded in doing so and rose once more to the surface. This time, albeit a little more unnerved and more breathless. Looking around for something to grasp, I espied four men clinging to a plank. In distance, the plank wasn't very far. In time, it was much further. But by using a variety of motions which would have shocked a swimming coach, I finally reached and grabbed that plank. It took some time to regain not only my breath but also my equanimity, and then it was the moment to take stock of this new little world around me. One man was lying almost prostrate across one end of the plank. He continually refused to lower himself into the water, and thus he rendered it very difficult and strenuous, the task of keeping the plank on an even keel. During the 7 hours or so we clung to that plank, he rarely stopped ranting and raving, using language that would have made a hardened trooper blush. A second man was holding on with one hand, but with the other and his arm, he was supporting a third man who was obviously in great pain and unable, without assistance, to stay afloat. The fourth stayed only until the rescue ship appeared to be near at hand, and with a loud, "Cheerio, I'm a good swimmer," he coolly and calmly set off swimming in the direction of the destroyer HMS Highlander. Otherwise, life on the plank was rather uneventful. Two German planes flew very low indeed over us, and the pilots were clearly visible. I could have sworn that one was giving us the V sign. At the sight of the planes, the hysterics of our ranter knew almost no bounds, and he cast doubts on the legitimacy of all Germans, past, present, and future. Every now and again, there was the rattle of machine guns and the retorts of Akak pom-poms. To provide us with another topic of conversation, the heavy black fuel oil oozing out of the now invisible liner not only blackened our skins, but it kept us warm and calmed the choppy sea. Live men without life jackets struggled to keep alive. Dead men with life jackets bobbed along and passed us by. Somehow, I got the impression that, through sheer exhaustion, they had just fallen asleep. I now believe that a number had jumped from the upper decks without holding down their life jackets, so that, through through the force of the impact with the water, their necks had been wrenched upwards and broken. For a few hours we drifted. At times we were relatively quite near to rescue craft, but they were so busy picking up survivors that they could not possibly have noticed us. After all, we were only four amongst thousands. It was some time before I realized how exhausting it was for the number two man to hold up the injured man, but every now and again we changed places. It was an extremely tricky business for us to edge round the plank without tipping it up. And so the hours rolled by. Twilight is long and drawn out at that time of the year in the Bay of Biscay. As it approached, and as the rescue ships diminished in numbers, the two of us, who were capable of normal speech, began wondering whether we could last out all night. The oil had considerably thinned out. In fact, apart from that imbibed by our paws, there was none to be seen. The waves now began to make themselves felt. 1 minute, we were down in a hollow, unable to see anything except the water around us and the rapidly darkening sky above us. The next, we were riding high and could see quite a distance around us. The sun was below the western horizon. The coldness of the water chilled our exhausted bodies. Arms, backs and shoulders were aching. Legs, thighs, and lower trunks were almost numb. The injured man, who had not yet uttered a single word, understood the trend of our conversation and let forth a feeble groan, as if to warn us that he could not last out the night. Only one little boat could be seen now, but we had almost given up hope of ever being spotted. Several more minutes rolled on, and then we realized this tiny boat was getting nearer and nearer. Salvation now appeared close at hand. Suddenly we were alongside. Two sailors threw down ropes, which were hitched underneath the injured man's arms, and he was slowly hoisted aboard the lifeboat. For such it was. One of the two Lancastrian lifeboats which had been lowered and had not been capsized. The ropes were thrown back to us, and after some effort we managed to get them underneath our prostrate friend's armpits, and likewise he was hauled aboard. With very little assistance from the men on the lifeboat, my other companion got aboard. Yet I, even when I tried jumping up, just could not reach high enough to grip the side. So I was assisted by means of ropes. With a final ounce of strength, I swung over the side and slumped like a sack of potatoes to the bottom of the boat, where I lay for some time, shivering with cold and exhaustion, and trying to recover my breath. Nevertheless, what an exhilarating feeling it was, almost as good as terra firma. Neptune certainly had had a busy day, but four more had escaped his amorous clutches. Several thousand had not. The years have rolled on. Death has passed me by on many occasions since then. Never, however, on those other occasions, did I have the opportunity and the time to stand and meditate on approaching death, as I did on that beautiful, warm June day of 1940, on the deck of the Lancastria in the Bay of Biscay.